up. Another Oedipus, 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 Oedipus. Now I'm running and I woke up. Another Rex, Rex, Rex.
Well, they say you learn something new every day, and while that's rarely true on Friday Drive, there is one segment where you are guaranteed to at least know some important surface details. It's time for the Bluffer's Guide once again, and Zoe Norton Lodge joins us. As always, Zoe, I'm ready to be educated. What have you got for us?
Okay, well, Julian, today I thought we would bluff our way through Oedipus Rex.
Well, I don't want to give away too much, but I feel like this is an area that I could well need to bluff in. So that's like a Greek thing, yeah?
Yeah. So
it's like pre-Nick Giannopoulos type
Just barely, yeah, just okay. barely, yeah. yeah. So basically, it is an ancient Greek drama, and there's a couple of things, you know, we might want to just know before we launch right into Sophocles.
Bit of context,
so,
I like it.
A little bit of context. I mean, we don't want to go overboard. This is the Bluffer's Guide, so this is going to be very, very surface-y and probably inaccurate.
Putting the con into context.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, when it comes to Greek drama, we've got your three big guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got Aeschylus, then we've got our mate Sophocles, and then a bit later we have Euripides.
Right.
Now, Aeschylus was credited with inventing the second actor, which meant that plays were a bit more interesting than just one guy talking to a chorus, which is what they were before then.
Go Aeschylus, all right, that's great.
Yeah. And he's also responsible for the trilogy form, which was like putting three long plays together and performing them over one excruciatingly awful day.
Has a lot to answer for on that front.
Definitely. Now, then comes Sophocles, and he brings in a third actor.
Oh, come on. That's just crazy.
I know. So group dynamics in theatre just exploded.
Wow.
And he also thought, rather sensibly, I think, that the trilogy format was a little old and fusty. So he said, stuff that, one play is plenty. And then he became really famous for writing the Oedipus trilogy.
Great. Well, good on him.
But it's fine because it's not really a trilogy in the sense that it was written out of order. It was never performed together. And as a threesome, it's riddled with so many internal inconsistencies that it would be stupid to call it a trilogy. Having said that, if you sort of rearrange the plays and squint a little bit, these three plays definitely tell the story of the rise and fall of Oedipus Rex and his kids.
Okay, so he's basically a very talented hypocrite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what else do we know about this man?
Well, we obviously, you know, we know a little bit about Oedipus because
from the
of old mate Freud.
Yeah, Freud, yeah.
Yeah, and so we all know he reckoned that all good boys want to sleep with their mums and murder their dads. But
sure.
I actually think Sophocles was making a far less wholesome and way more disturbing point than that.
Right.
His big take home was that we have absolutely no control whatsoever over our own fate, which is mildly terrifying. So I reckon the way we're going to do this today is let's just desecrate the main play, Oedipus the King, and completely ignore the other two plays.
That sounds like the only logical way to proceed.
I agree. Okay, shall we go?
Let's do it.
Okay, so you've got Oedipus. He's king of Thebes. And he hears this rumour that some jerk has put a curse on his city. So he asks a priest what's going on. And the priest is like, you know, I hate to be a negative Nelly, but everyone is kind of down in the dumps because of all the crippling death and illness and despair that's going on around here. And Oedipus is like, yes, I am across that. Don't you remember the last time I saved the city by lifting the curse that Sphinx put on us? I've already sent my brother-in-law Creon to go visit Apollo and see what is going on with this curse. So the yammering away, and Creon returns, and he's like, it's fine. I get it now. All we have to do to lift the curse is kill whoever murdered the old King Laius, who was killed at a crossroads some heaps of years before.
I feel a plot thickening.
Yeah. So Oedipus is like, well, why haven't we done this already? Like, why didn't we try to find out who murdered the king? That seems like something we would do.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, that's right. That awful Sphinx warned me not to look into this murder for some reason.
Oh.
Screw you, Sphinx. I'm going to look into it anyway. So Oedipus goes off patting himself on the back very loudly for his great idea, and he leaves us with the chorus. Now, the chorus are basically a bunch of whining losers, and they lament for ages about how all the crops are dead and all the people are infertile and everyone is dying.
That doesn't sound like a very good people
to
have a party
with. It's
not
the highlight.
No,
it's not the highlight of the play.
Okay.
Anyway, Oedipus comes back and he wants to question people about, you know, who murdered the king. And the chorus say he should start with the blind prophet called Tiresias. Oedipus, who is extremely self-defensive about ideas, is like, I know. I have already asked the blind prophet to come. So the prophet arrives and he's like, Oedipus, you probably don't want to hear what I have to say. And Oedipus employs his awesome insult, you would provoke a stone, he says to the blind
sorry,
person.
Sorry, please be careful. This is radio national. You can't
I
say
apologize.
Stuff like that on air.
We've got that 7-second delay,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
We'll get that. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, okay, great. So then the prophet is like, sheesh, okay, fine, I'll tell you since you've sworn at me. And the thing is, Oedipus, you killed King Laius.
Whoa, hang on. Yeah. Because Oedipus was saying we've got to look into this.
Yeah.
Oh, now all of a sudden the Sphinx is looking a bit better. Am I right? Yeah.
So obviously Oedipus is not happy about this at all. So he loses his cool and he's like, well, you, blind prophet, must be conspiring with my brother-in-law, who I've decided is mean, that guy Creon, to nab the throne off me, you stupid, blindy, blind, no-seeing bad eyes. I'm sorry, I'll show myself out. And the prophet is like, wait, before you leave, Oedipus, you're going to end up blind and poor and alone. And hear my cryptic message. Oedipus is son and husband both.
Which I think sounds actually more offensive than you would provoke a stone.
But well, anyway. Look, each to their own. Times have changed.
Yeah, sure.
And Oedipus is like, what could that possibly mean? This is way too confusing. And meanwhile, Creon storms in and is like, I can hear you. I don't want the throne. It sucks being you. And Oedipus is like, I'm going to kill you. And then Oedipus's wife, Jocasta, comes in and is like, I hate fighting. Everyone stop it. And Creon storms off, really PO'd about the death threat. And Jocasta is like, what is going on? So Oedipus explains about the prophet. And then she's like, please. Please, Oedipus, prophets are idiots. Like, get this. Ages ago, I had a son with King Laius, and a prophet told us that our son would kill the king and shack up with me. But we killed our son, so that couldn't possibly happen. So prophets are idiots. We have a great life. We've got wonderful children. Let's just drop it. And Oedipus is like, huh. Yeah, well, the thing is, I've just remembered when I was a kid, an old man told me I was adopted and that one day I would kill my dad and marry my mum. And also, I did kill a guy at a crossroads a while ago. So then a messenger shows up and it's like, g'day, Oedipus, okay, here's the score. You were adopted. Your real dad has just died. I'm sorry about that. And then actually, yeah, an old shepherd gave me to you when you were a baby. Now your feet were stabbed and tied together, so we called you Oedipus or Grossfoot. And Jocasta, the wife, runs away. She works out what's happened and she hangs herself in shame. And the old shepherd, who is remarkably still alive, peeks out from the chorus and is like, yep, that checks out. You've been sleeping with your mum and you killed your dad. So Oedipus runs off to his dead mother, pulls the brooches off her dress, stabs himself in the eyes, and then somehow, reasonably still compos mentis, explains to everyone that he gouged out his own eyes because there was nothing nice left to see in the world. Then he begs his brother-in-law Creon for exile because he doesn't deserve the more pleasant alternative, which is death.
Wow, that's it's a great soap opera.
It is.
Fantastic. And look, if we've learned nothing else out of this today, and we have learned lots else, I've got to clarify that,
yeah.
Oedipus or Grossfoot. That's my favourite detail.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so we've basically just got, I mean, that's like worth a PhD or something in ancient drama studies, I would have thought.
At least, yeah.
All right, well, Zoe Norton Lodge, I feel so much more educated than I otherwise would. Thank you very much for joining us on Friday Drive.
Anytime.
The absolutely magnificent Zoe Norton Lodge there, and it's coming up to 7 on Friday Drive. After 7, we'll have our last question time for the year, and sadly enough, my last question time on RN Drive ever. But what a classy lineup we have to round things off. Malcolm Farr, political editor for news.com.au, Christina Keneally, CEO of Basketball Australia and former Premier of New South Wales, and Kara Kidman, the founding mother of the Unwatchable TV and culture segment on this show, also a lawyer, Jill of all trades, and she'll be doing her bit to quiz our way through not just the last week's events, but the entire year's. That's all coming up on the final hour of Friday Drive, the live bit for 2013, right after the news.